Welcome to Adventures in Grace. This is Jim Hockaday. I'm looking forward to our video today. It's going to be a wonderful time to get back into God's Determination, Part 3. And so before we do, let's go over again the three reasons why we're doing these videos. Number one, so that people can begin to experience God as a tangible person, where He begins to work in your life and you see the results of God on a day-to-day basis. We all love the idea that by faith we trust in Him and believe Him, but how much more to see the evidence of your faith and God living in your life? Number two, that your prayers would get answered. And that's the part where God, being tangible and real in your everyday life, you begin to see the results of His influence in everything that you do. And number three, that you'll be able to tell those simple little stories, testimonies to those around you, and it becomes a tremendous witness. So as we always have, we want to give you the invitation that Jesus gave us, and that is in Matthew chapter 11, 27 to 30. In the Message Bible, it says, "Now Jesus resumed talking to the people, but now tenderly. The Father has given me all these things to do and say." This is a unique father and son operation coming out of father and son intimacies and knowledge. "No one knows the Son the way the Father does, nor the Father the way the Son does, but I'm not keeping it to myself. I'm ready to go over it line by line with anyone willing to listen. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting upon you. Keep company with me and you'll learn how to live freely and lightly." Well, again, what a wonderful invitation that is. And think about that life, walking with Jesus, working with Jesus, enjoying the presence of the Lord in your everyday doings until God begins to influence every single thing you do. And that's His intention, that we might have that kind of a tangible relationship. Well, we're going to jump right back in over to Hebrews in chapter 6, verse 13 to 20. I'm going to read this in the New King James Version, and then we'll go ahead and read in the Message as well. And it says, "For when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, 'Surely blessing I will bless you, multiplying, I will multiply you.' And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men indeed swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation is for them an end of all dispute. Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, so that two immutable things in which it's impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become a high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek." This is a tremendous passage of scripture. There's so much in here. Obviously, we can't touch everything, and I don't know everything about this passage. But the things that we know stand out so clearly. I'm going to read it in the Message Bible as well. But I want you to see here is God made a covenant with Abraham to bring surety, confidence, and absoluteness to his promise. He didn't just say, "Abraham, you're going to have to believe me whether you like it or not." He proved himself. And I want you to get this. The old song we used to sing, "Jesus, Jesus, how I trust you, how I've proved you o'er and o'er." Well, the old saints didn't have any plan B, C, D, E, or F. So they just had to prove God over and over and over. And you know, it's kind of like if you get a taste of something that's really, really good. Oh, that's the scripture. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. If you get a taste of God and how you can trust Him, then you no longer fear to trust Him again. Now, I've said this, and I don't mean to make somebody mad or feel bad about this, but this is a really good saying. And that, as I've said for years, people still believe in faith as long as they don't have to use theirs. And what does that seem to indicate? But we don't have confidence in our own relationship with God. This is one of the reasons why people really enjoy being in a corporate setting, because they can feed off of the confidence of others. But God actually wants you to live in that confidence and even more by yourself. Now think about this. The one time, maybe two times, possibly more, that you actually go to a place of worship is very, very small, and the percentage is very small to the amount of time you have on a given week where you're just with you. So where should we actually put the emphasis of our relationship with God? On our everyday eating, sleeping, waking, walking, going to work, doing the chores or the things that we do. That's where we need our relationship to shine. I've said this before, and this is very true, that my real idea, vision of what church really is a place where people can't wait to go to a place of worship where there's other people where they can interact and share their testimonies of what God has been doing all week long. Now think about getting saved in a building called a church where people are giving testimonies of this pain disappeared, this tumor disappeared, God influenced my job. While I was going home from work, I mean, there was this beautiful bird of prey that swooped right down in front of my car and went back up into the air, and it was just so beautiful. I mean, even something like that, someone comes into a service and hears that, and all of a sudden they begin to realize, man, these people take advantage of every little thing that's in the earth and allow God to be a part of it. That's what I want in my life. And then they see the tangible results, the answers to prayers that come, that these people don't think, and they stand up and testify as though they've actually had some before and they can't wait to have another one again. It kind of goes back to my idea of real Christianity, which is over in Romans in chapter 8, where it says, Abba Father, or in the Message Bible, what's next, Papa? Do you see where we're coming from? That we ought to actually experience him one moment and then want to have another experience the next moment. Not go so far in between where yes, I had an experience back 15 years ago. Well, that's wonderful 15 years ago, but what about the last 14 years? What about the last 11 months? And then we can just count it down to how many days and hours that you've gone without an experience. So this is where it gets good, and I love what God's doing with Abraham, and this is what he did with us with Jesus, is he's giving him a covenant to give him the absoluteness of faith, where an individual then has no problem stepping beyond themselves to believe in God. So we're going to go right here to the Message translation, and then we're going to break some of this down, as we've already touched on this in a couple of the other sessions that we've had. It said, when God has made his promise, verse 13, to Abraham, he backed it to the hilt, putting his own reputation on the line. See, that's what we're talking about. Don't you just love that? That God would go to that degree to bring confidence and assurance to Abraham, that Abraham would then trust him with the audacity of faith, which would put himself in a risk according to the earthly perspective, but according to God's perspective, there's no risk at all. Isn't this what your heart desires to do, is to put yourself out there? I go back to this, and I'll always go back to this, because you can't say it any better than A.W. Tozier. When he spoke about faith, he said, real faith is where you put yourself on purpose in a position where you can't go back. Pseudo faith is where you have a way out just in case God fails you. Now think about that, where you put yourself on purpose in a position where you can't go back. You put yourself on purpose in a position where you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and the only salvation is God and God alone. That's the scriptures. That's what we see over in Hebrews chapter 11, one after the other, by faith Abraham, by faith Sarah, by faith Noah, by faith Moses, on and on and on. This is what we see. Individuals who encountered God, and with their great expectancy of that encounter, put themselves in a position where they couldn't go back. That's where things happen. God delights in this, because that's where we trust him. And if we'll learn to let God become more real to us on a day-to-day basis, it won't seem like you're throwing your life away to trust God. It'll become normal. It'll become a regular experience. Just like we see with Jesus. Every single miracle that he worked, it looked like he'd been doing it all his life. And if you think about it, in one sense, he just started at the age of 30. Well, he didn't start his relationship with his father at the age of 30. We know at the age of 12, he already recognized that God was his father. So all that time, those 18 silent years until Jesus came on the scene at 30 years of age, what was he doing but working in the carpenter shop and continuing to allow the Father to become real to him every single day and the menial tasks that he would do, as well as what we can see became a reality to Jesus in the scriptures, where he pulled himself away and went into the mountains to a time of prayer. And in those times of prayer, God would come literally out of him and the presence of the Lord would come upon him and he would begin to speak audibly, and there would be so much tangibility that Jesus, when it came time to walk in that tangibility, it's as though he'd been doing it all his life. I mean, even look at his first miracle at the wedding feast of Cana, John chapter 2. You know, Mary, his mother, came to him and said, "Jesus, we're out of wine." And what was Jesus' response? "Well, Mom, I knew someday you were going to ask me to, you know, to like Superman, to go into the phone booth and as Clark Kent and come out, you know, as the savior of the world. I knew someday you were going to do this." No, you know what his response was? "What does your concern have to do with me? Oh, come on, Mom. What are you asking me for?" Mary must have had some type of responsibility over that wedding so that she would actually be concerned about something and have servants that would actually pay attention to her and listen to her. Because the next thing that she did is she turned to the servants and said, "Whatever he tells you to do, you do it." Now, you can't just go into somebody else's wedding and boss around the servants to do something that would get them fired. Like take water out of the barrel and give it to the master of the feast. And somehow in between it turns into wine. Do you see what we're talking about? But my point is, do you see how relaxed Jesus was? He wasn't even in a position like he'd been praying all night long with a word of knowledge, knowing that he was going to do his first miracle at the wedding feast of Cana. And he came ready and he was on edge. I believe maybe he was a little tired. He could have been asleep through half the wedding. And Mary came to him, put a demand on him. And his first response is, this isn't my thing. And I believe Mary said, "No, it's your thing now. And you're going to do this." And isn't it interesting? He turned water into wine. Come on. We would have said things like, "You know what? I'm not a prophet, so I can't do that. I don't have the gift of special faith, and I don't have the gift, you know, the working of miracles in my life." And we would have come up with all kinds of excuses and said, "No, I'm not the apostle. I can't do it. You know what? It's as the Spirit wills, and I don't know that the Spirit's willing right now, and so I just can't do this." You know, all the excuses we would have come up with, because we've so become so brilliant in our teaching that we've taught ourselves right out of the boldness of the kind of faith that comes in a covenant, where you've got a covenant partner that will never let you down. And if he's spoken to you about what he will do, and he has the ability to do it. I'm not talking about we're in covenant with somebody next door. And you know, there's some days they're really on it and you can trust them. And other days they just aren't, you know, they just aren't on their best. And you just don't ever know what's going to come out. No, we're talking about we're in covenant with God. God who made the sun, the moon, and the stars. And in a couple minutes, we're going to see a verse here that's going to share just that. God defending his right to do what? To perform every single word that he has spoken. For what purpose and end goal? That we, the children of God, might be so bold as to run right into a battle, to put ourselves right into the beehive, right where the bees could sting you, knowing that they can't touch you, for God is greater. Greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world. This is what it means, that we have such confidence in life. There ought to be something so radically different about us, the children and sons of God, even on this side of the covenant, than they were on that side of the covenant. And the things we're seeing here about Abraham just almost kind of flip our lid, you know? Almost blow a fuse when you look at what Abraham did and you think, God, I don't even know that I could have done that. Put my son on the altar, had a knife getting ready to put it in his heart and then burn him alive and watch you raise him out of the ashes. I mean, even if I knew that was true, I wouldn't have wanted to do it. And Abraham was ready to follow through. We're going to see this, folks. This is where we're heading. And isn't it interesting? Our time has just gone by so quickly. I'll tell you what, I've got enough to at least read the Message Bible. You're going to like it. He said he backed it to the hilt, putting his own reputation on the line. He said, I'll promise that I'll bless you with everything I have. Bless and bless and bless. Abraham stuck it out and got everything that he had promised to him. When people make promises, they guarantee them by appeal to some authority above them so that if there is any question that they'll make good on the promise, the authority will back them up. When God wanted to guarantee his promises, he gave his word, a rock solid guarantee. God can't break his word. And because his word cannot change, the promise is likewise unchangeable. We who have run for our very lives to God have every reason to grab the promise hope with both hands and never let go. It's an unbreakable spiritual lifeline reaching past all appearances right to the very presence of God, where Jesus, running on ahead of us, has taken up his permanent post as high priest for us in the order of Melchizedek. I have a little grace story. And this is interesting because as I give this, you may think, well, I don't know how much of a grace story that is. I'll show you in just a moment. There's so much of God's grace we're missing. An individual writes to me, thank you for standing with me in prayer. She said, I didn't need to see a doctor, but a specialist ordered a CT scan, a CAT scan, and it will be for Tuesday this week, the 12th of April. It's my heart's desire for this to be a testimony for the doctors that God still heals today. We'll let you know when I receive the CT scan results. Thank you for Adventures in Grace. Why is that a grace story? It's a grace story because she's at a point where she could just keep going to the doctor, keep moving towards all the medical profession, and she stopped to say, I know that God did something, let's get a scan, and now we're going to prove that God is my healer. Every single miracle or testimony, there'll always be a point where you'll come to a place, I call it contention. Sorry that it took me a moment to get that out. A place of contention where there's a fight, where you're either going to step across the line that represents where you feel comfortable, or you're going to step back so that you can stay comfortable. And in that place is where you make a decision. She's making that decision, and that's the influence of grace. Grace will always help you to move beyond yourself at that point of contention and find God. Well, it's wonderful to be with you. Go to the Adventures in Grace YouTube channel and subscribe. You go to Jim Hockaday Ministry Facebook page and follow us. We definitely want to hear your grace stories. So go to jimhockaday.com and find our email, which is jhmi@jimhockaday.com. We'll see you next time for part 4 of God's Determination.